Off the ball. Rugby.
What Joey Barrett has brought to the club, the performances he's had, the punch that he gives, is another dimension on what Robbie's game is. That's the reality.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hey there, it's Owen here and you're welcome back to Diverted, a 10-part original series for Off the Ball. In every episode of this series, we go to a different country in Latin America, and this week we're bringing you the first part of Argentina. We'll be visiting the Buenos Aires Hurling Club, we'll be spending time with gauchos playing the national sport of Argentina, and we will meet the famous sporting family, the McAllisters. That's coming your way in just a few minutes, and before that, we're getting you back to the hitchhiking journey through Patagonia, which continues at the beginning of each episode. And a heads up that there is bad language in this podcast, but positive ratings, if you enjoyed what you heard, would be fantastic. Cheers. I would suggest that I'm in a small spot of bother. If you didn't listen to the last dispatch, then there's no brief way to fill you in on everything, but I found myself stuck in a tiny roadside settlement called Bajo Caracolas. A Chilean truck driver abandoned me, and I couldn't hitch another lift. I'm 130 kilometres past the last reasonably sized town, and over 220 kilometres away from the next reasonably sized town. Darkness has descended. The winds are going crazy, and no one has any accommodation for me because the winds have led to a crew of bikers booking out this hostel. I've generously been offered a spot outside in the shed where I can pitch a tent. I do not have a tent. The only thing stopping me from being kicked out into the night is the fact that I've ordered food now. The best development of the day is that the food is taking ages. Slow service is preventing my impending homelessness for the night. So I'm sitting at this kitchen table, wishing for the time to tick by just a little quicker. The bikers arrive into the hostel, and to be fair, there are a lot of them. They all check into their rooms, and they join me at the table. Ah, we're having dinner together. It's a group of eight men, and despite my inner turmoil, it's obvious that each and every one of them are very sound. Not sound enough for me to ask if they'll go top and tails in their bed, however, but sound enough for me to at least forget about the shit I'm in for a few moments. They're from a place called Santa Rosa La Pampa, a town around 600 kilometres away from Buenos Aires. They're 3,000 kilometres deep on a round trip down to Ushuaia.
Punta Arena.
Y regresar a Santa Rosa.
A Santa Rosa.
Wow.
And they ask how I ended up here. And it's therapeutic to be able to explain, even to strangers, the events of the last number of hours.
Tenía que agarrar un micro, un colectivo, que...
Dedo. Para mí, dedo. Haz mi dedo. Hoy estuvo muy malo.
Muy malo hoy.
Hoy.
I say that I'm sure tomorrow will be better.
A mañana. Mejor. A mañana mejor. Estoy seguro.
I'm not quite sure where I'm getting that confidence given all known evidence is very much to the contrary.
Bueno, gracias. Voy a limpiar todo el desastre que hice allá y vuelvo.
Muchas gracias.
Dinner is chicken milanesa and mashed potato. And honestly, someone needs to write a PhD on the science behind the calming effect of comfort food, because this is absolutely working. The lads are on the beer. So I'm now also on the beer.
Salud, amigos. Salud.
The curiosity of sound Argentinians knows no bounds, and they're asking me if Ireland is very green.
Muy verde.
Muy verde. Mucha lluvia.
And then one of them tells me he's been to Ireland, and he pulls out his phone, and it's a picture of him.
Exactamente, el Temple Bar.
Caro, no?
Muy caro.
He also asks me to identify the Dublin nightclub he's in this video.
¿Es amigo tuyo?
It's the George. The George Bar, creo.
I'm feeling a little bit better about life, and I approach the hostel owner for one last roll of the dice. I basically beg to just have the privilege of sitting on one of those kitchen chairs for the night. But I'm told to sit down and leave her alone. I'll soon be out in the cold. I joined the bikers in heating my shoes and my jacket near the fire. Dessert comes along. Tinned fruit. The hostel owner walks up to the door. And she places a padlock on the inside of it. The sight of being locked into this kitchen is almost as joyous a feeling as having to wait a couple of hours for food earlier. This is very hopeful. I turn around, and then I see it. On the tiled floor of this kitchen sits a mattress, a sheet, and a rug. It's mine. The floor is mine. People talk about the joy of their wedding day or the joy of having children or whatever, but those people have clearly never experienced surprise mattress on a kitchen floor joy. The gods of Patagonia have shone down on me. I am sleeping indoors tonight. A deck of cards comes out, and half the bikers stay up to play a few hands at the kitchen table, while I pass out on the mattress on the floor in the corner. Okay, so last night was an interesting one. It was one of the best nights of sleep I've had on this trip. It was perfect and peaceful, and I was just very, very thankful that I wasn't homeless last night. To be fair to the hostel owner, she only wants to charge me for the food I ate last night and not for the accommodation. But that mattress and floor was so bloody good that I insist on paying for the night.
I'm not going to lie. I did consider... No, I didn't just consider. I investigated the parachute option, which is... take as much cash as I have in my bag and just try and pay for a taxi to get to the nearest town being like 100 kilometers away. But the person in the hostel didn't have any numbers for taxi men, and there was no Wi-Fi. So it's now 7 o'clock and 7:30. And after that experience, I've really just been like, fuck it, I'm getting the fuck out of this place ASAP. So I've actually approached a couple of people this morning, being like, can you just drive me, please? Please? Please, can you just drive me? instead of putting the thumb out. And those people have said no. Those people have said no. So I am back where I was yesterday, but it is far less windy.
The volume of morning time traffic is extremely encouraging. And within an hour, I'm in a truck again. You'll never guess what country this truck driver's from. That's right, it's a Chilean truck driver. This man is called Ramon, and the best thing about Ramon is that he is not Victor. Ramon is driving a truck with a car-carrying trailer, and on the trailer there are 10 cars. This is a massive vehicle, and yet I've noticed him swerving around the odd bump in the road here and there, as if he's driving a Micra. He also absolutely blows the guanaco out of it whenever we come across any that have wandered onto the road. Ramon is a very, very, very cheerful man. He laughs a lot. He laughs a lot when I tell him that I'm a sports journalist, which, to be fair, is not a real job.
Soy periodista deportes. Sí, soy...
He laughs when I tell him about yesterday's hitchhiking disaster, which, to be fair, is funny for everyone that's not me.
3 horas y media.
And then he laughs his head off when I tell him that I lived with two mates back in Dublin.
Dos amigos.
Which is a cracking line, to be fair.
4K.
Actually, wait. There is absolutely nothing funny about that. This man appears to be laughing hysterically for no apparent reason. I'm trying to figure out if I've said something wrong when I notice that Ramon is nodding off ever so slightly at the wheel. Oi, amigo! He seems a bit embarrassed. He points above his head and asks me to reach up there and get him something in a shelf. It's a can of energy drink. We fire up the gas canister and heat up some water for a strong cup of coffee as well. He's also got a few biscuits. Not long to the next town. We're going to be okay. The today's aim is basically the same as yesterday's aim. I want to get to the town of El Chalten, which is 460 kilometers away from where I slept last night. Given I managed over 510 kilometers yesterday, it seems very achievable. Especially given Ramon seems like he's driving the whole way there on his way down to Punta Arenas. I say seems like because there is now some confusion.
Chalten es más norte.
Más para acá.
Yeah, so después Calafate.
No, más para acá Calafate.
No, but Calafate es sur de Chalten.
Tú te vendes por Calafate.
Ramon seems to be telling me that I should go to El Calafate first and then El Chalten. I want to go to both of these towns, so it's not a big deal. But El Chalten is further north than Calafate. I'm travelling from the north, so my idea makes sense, I think. I understand that I'll need to get a second lift to get there, but Calafate isn't on Route 40 either, so that will also require a second lift. I'm struggling to see Ramon's logic, although I suspect I might be missing the intricacies of the point he's trying to make, given the language barrier. Nevertheless, I'm not overly worried. I've got Google Maps set for El Chalten and we are flying that way, down Route 40. Everything is going just fine. We arrive in the town of Gobernador Gregores and we pull into the YPF petrol station on the outskirts of town. As it turns out, I meet the bikers from last night once more, and I have one last conversation with them at the petrol station. I say my final goodbyes, and they continue to zoom towards Ushuaia. Ramon and I stock up on supplies, and we're good to go again. We drive through the town of Gobernador Gregores, and we continue out the other side. We see a sign for Calafate and Chalten, and Ramon points them out. We're getting closer. Wait. Hold on a minute. Those signs for Calafate and Chalten were for the right turn back there. I open Google Maps. Yeah, this is no longer the way to El Chalten. In fact, Maps tells me that we needed to turn right back there to continue down Route 40. Going straight on here is actually just taking us away from Chalten, from Calafate and along Route 27. I say this to Ramon, and he says no, this is Route 40. And I break the news to him that Google Maps is telling me the opposite. He does a double take, and then he stops the truck. He takes my phone and he examines what I'm looking at. He seems to accept that he's wrong. Ramon then makes one of the wildest decisions I've ever seen a human being make in real life. Bear in mind what he's driving here. A massive truck with 10 cars on the trailer behind it. Ramon, in his car-carrying trailer, decides to try and perform a U-turn. This is a road with one lane of traffic going either way, and to the sides of the road there is a drop of a couple of inches down to a sea of stones. His front wheels cross the road, down into the stones, and lo and behold, the whole thing comes to a halt. It will go no further. He tries to click the thing into reverse. Nope. Not a hope in hell. I don't know what Ramon was expecting, but this thing is going nowhere. The more he tries to move, the more his wheels dig deeper into the stones. The cabin violently shakes and it feels for a split second like the whole thing might capsize. He tries turning it off and turning it back on again. He's been tapping away at that radio trying to get it to shut up so he can concentrate, but even that won't work. DJ Boy, mezclando en vivo para la raza. eventually gives it a whack. Ramon gets out and he starts using his hands to dig his wheels out from the stones. I don't have the heart to tell him that that's completely futile, but I can't imagine the panic he must be experiencing right now. Imagine the phone call with your boss, telling them what he'd just done with the truck carrying all the cars. I step out and I have a look at the situation here. We have a massive truck which is blocking the entire road and cannot move. You remember when that cargo ship, Ever Given, blocked up the Suez Canal? Imagine that, but on land. This is Argentina Route 27's Suez Canal moment. And I just cannot believe I've gone from one complete shit show to another complete shit show in consecutive days. Twenty-four days later, I'm in the city of Santa Rosa, capital of La Pampa province. It's taken me 11 hours on a bus from Buenos Aires to get here, and it's pretty much slap bang in the middle of Argentina. You'll notice that this is not the first time you'll have heard Santa Rosa La Pampa in this episode. The bikers from the Shack and Bajo Caracolas are also from Santa Rosa La Pampa. In fact, I'm in Santa Rosa because of the bikers from the Shack and Bajo Caracolas. So this turned out to be one of the most surreal interactions I've ever had. Obviously, as you well know, I'm not exactly in a great headspace when I meet these bikers. I believe I'm going to end up homeless, sent out into the Patagonian night, and I'm worried about how I'm going to survive it. I probably seem a little bit distracted or distant when I'm having the chat with the bikers. They're asking me what I do. And I tell them about my work and that I'm here in Argentina speaking to people about various things, but mostly sport. One of the men then asks me if I know Alexis McAllister. Of course I know who Alexis McAllister is. World Cup winning midfielder with Argentina, McAllister has become a national hero here and will become a star player for Liverpool in a few months' time. McAllister famously has Irish heritage, and he has the surname and the ginger hair to prove it. His ancestors are from Donabate in County Dublin. I'm Irish, and I love football, so the bikers are bringing me into conversation in fairness to them. But they tell me that they are from the same town as Alexis McAllister. Some of them are taxi drivers, and they say to me that they used to drive Alexis to football training when he was a child. They are friends with the McAllister family.
So, Pato es el padre?
No, el tío.
El tío.
El que es el representante de él.
And they say I need to go to Santa Rosa to meet his family.
El padrino de Alexis.
Oh, sí, sí, sí.
De amigo de él.
Ah, sí, amigo de sí. Ah, sí.
And there then develops this bizarre scene where three separate men are on their phones trying to ring Alexis McAllister's family, trying to see if it would be okay to set me up with a visit.
So, ¿qué es la conexión?
On the one hand, I'm still massively stressed about where I'm going to sleep. And on the other hand, staggered by the freakishness of these worlds colliding.
Si vos estás en Buenos Aires,
Santa Rosa. So, todos los familias de Santa Rosa?
Santa Rosa.
Wow, loco.
The next day, when I bump into the bikers at the petrol station in Gobernador Gregores, one of them pulls me aside. He gives me a number for Carlos Patricio McAllister, more commonly known as Pato McAllister. When I'm back in Buenos Aires a few weeks later, I drop Pato a text. And I'm as surprised as anyone that he actually texts back. He tells me I'm welcome in Santa Rosa anytime. So right now, I'm sitting in a cafe in Santa Rosa, waiting to meet Pato. Pato is Alexis McAllister's uncle.
Patricio, ¿qué tal?
¿Todo tranquilo?
Todo tranquilo.
¿Hablas muy bien español?
No mucho.
Bien, muy bien.
Pato is the older brother of Carlos Javier McAllister, who's Alexis's dad. Carlos himself played for Argentina, carving out an impressive club career with Argentinos Juniors and then Boca Juniors, where he played with Diego Maradona. Off the pitch, he served as Secretary of Sports in the country's government from 2015 to 2018. Pato himself also had a decent career. He also played for Argentinos Juniors and had two stints with Estudiantes de La Plata. He keeps himself in good shape and orders just a coffee, while I order a coffee and two small media luna croissants.
¿Te gusta media luna?
Sí, well, you know, cuando tienes tiempo en Argentina es esencial para comer media luna todos los tiempos.
He asks me to remind him how exactly I ended up running into his friends 1,600 kilometers away from here.
Y no tengo la troca, no tengo carro. No,
nada.
No, so voy al hotel pequeño y dice con mi oh, mi amigo Pato en Santa Rosa es la familia del McAllister. El mundo es muy pequeño.
El mundo es muy pequeño, es así.
Pato is a popular man in town, and everyone seems to know him.
Un amigo.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
The McAllisters are clearly some of the most recognisable people in Santa Rosa, not least because they run a football academy here in town.
Te busco, vamos al club.
And Pato asks if I'd like to go out and take a look at the club.
Here, McAllister Club.
Wow.
He drives me to a huge sports facility on the edge of town. There's a big sign outside that says, "Welcome to the city of Alexis McAllister, champion of the world." This is Club Deportivo McAllister, a football school founded by Pato and his brother in 1998. The family crest is the academy's crest, and there are photos everywhere of the current professional footballers who have come through these gates.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
The aim of the academy is to give young footballers the education they need to be able to step into a professional environment. Scouts from the big clubs in the country are regular visitors. Kids play here from the age of 5 up until they are ready for senior football. It's mostly local children, but there are also some from further afield.
Este, El Salvador, país.
Ah,
su país, El Salvador.
Mucho gusto, amigo. ¿Qué tal?
Amigo de Irlanda. Y el Perú.
Ah, Perú. Ah, mucho gusto.
Pato is on a first-name basis with every single one of the kids in here. And as far as I can tell, he's beloved by the lot of them.
¿Y de qué clase? ¿De tres?
De tres.
¿Y vos?
De seis.
¿Y bien también?
También bien.
From the conversations I have with Pato, one of his big frustrations is that Argentina is a country with loads of talent, but often doesn't make the most of it. He wants to do his bit to industrialise football talent. And he's got a psychologist, a nutritionist, a doctor, a kinesiologist, technical directors and physical directors here to help the kids reach their potential. There are around 10 pitches and there are plans to build on a new site nearby. Alexis McAllister was born the same year this place opened its doors. It's clear that this is a footballer made in a lab.
Hola.
Un amigo. Owen, ¿cómo se dice?
Owen.
Owen.
Owen, sí.
Owen.
Hola, Owen. Teacher like me.
Sí, exactamente. Yes.
Nicholas McAllister is Pato's son. He is the spitting image of his first cousin, Alexis. And he is the sporting director here.
Is it just you and Alexis who have the red hair? Or is it all of the family?
And my uncle too.
Okay.
And the father of Alexis,
okay.
Carlos Javier, is ginger too.
Is he? But he's bald now, right?
Yes, he's bald now.
It's fair to say that the family is still feeling the joy that comes with winning the World Cup.
Here's Molina to drive it across, turn towards goal, and in! Alexis McAllister!
Was crazy because now changed everything for us. It's different because our name is so famous now. Every people here relation my name and my aspect with Alexis. And thus all the people think I am his brother, or I am, some people think he's, wow, it's Alexis. No, I am not Alexis. I am his cousin.
He's going through his phone, showing me his photos of being on the pitch in Qatar after Argentina have just won the World Cup.
Nice.
Look at that.
Ah, there you are.
He shows me his selfies with his cousin and his dad and with Lionel Messi.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. That's obviously a professional photographer.
Yes. When the people see the pictures of the last title of Argentina with Maradona, we always say, that person is in the history because always the people seeing his photo, right? And we are in this place now. Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about where we are, about La Pampa and about Santa Rosa?
This is a quiet city, it's so relaxed city, but it's a city with few opportunities for the people, you know? And we try to change that with our club. We try to make opportunities for the players in this city. We haven't professional clubs here, but we are a good academy for formation of talent.
And Alexis isn't a stranger around these parts.
Alexis once a year stay here for a week, visit the club, visit the boys. The boys saw Alexis like something close. That is so important for the kids because now he's a superstar. But a few months ago, he's in the club training like something normal, and now he's a superstar. Something in one interview, he says, "My life is the same. He's worried like always," and I say he's always the same. He's always the same. He's bored, he's quiet, he's relaxed boy, he's so humble, I think.
We get chatting about the family's links to Ireland.
I have no a few information, but in the World Cup, I saw my parents in Twitter talking with the journalists, and was nice, was nice. When I visit my cousin in England, I try to go to Ireland, yes. In Argentina, we are so few people, persons, sincere and with like us. And maybe in Ireland, I am something normal, no? Yeah.
You will just fit in with the crowd.
Yes, yes.
Once Pato has finished doing a session with the kids, he comes in for a chat. He doesn't speak English, and so we chat away in Spanish. Well, he chats away in Spanish and I fumble around with some version of the language.
For us, it is a source of pride that you can be here from so many kilometers away and that you have come and made your financial effort and your personal effort to be here. So you are welcome here. It is your home as well.
Así que sos bienvenido, esta es tu casa. Y bueno, nosotros, como dijiste en tu introducción, somos una familia de fútbol.
We are a football family and we breathe and live football all the time. And it is a source of pride for us to have people from Ireland. Our ancestors and our last name comes from that area. So we are very happy that you're here.
Así que estamos muy contentos de que estés aquí.
We're sitting in front of a photo of Carlos Javier and Maradona sitting side by side in the Boca Juniors dressing room. In the photo, the two men have on their knees Alexis as a small child and his two brothers, Francis and Kevin. They are also professional footballers now.
Para nosotros también es... Es una, un gran orgullo que mi hermano haya jugado con Maradona.
For us, it is also a great source of pride that my brother has played with Maradona and Alexis, his son, has played with Messi, the two greatest players that Argentina has produced.
Todos los niños aquí en Argentina cuando nacen, lo primero que hacen en la familia es ponerle una camiseta de un club.
All the children here in Argentina when they are born, the first thing they do in the family is put on a club shirt. And, well... All of our children in our family were practically born with the football under their arm.
Nacieron con una pelota de fútbol prácticamente bajo su brazo, nacieron.
One of the things that is beyond obvious about this country is that the people interact with football on a level that is maniacal. It's the number one sport in most countries in the world, but in Argentina it feels number one by a ridiculous distance. And I ask Pato, what's the difference here?
Yo pienso porque primero porque hay una mucha pasión de la gente. Hay una mezcla de colectividades que han venido de otros países.
I think, first of all, because there is a lot of passion among the people, there is a mix of communities, many English, Irish, Italian, Spanish, German, and Turkish immigrants. All of that mixed with our indigenous culture has surely made the people a little stronger and a little competitive due to history and even a little more aggressive. When European colonization came, the indigenous people here had to defend themselves, and that made the whole culture very strong mentally. On top of that, we have had the greatest global players.
Di Stefano in Real Madrid, Mario Kempes in la década del 70 y del 80.
Di Stefano in Real Madrid, Mario Kempes in the 70s and the 80s, Then Maradona arrived, and when Maradona is finished, the Messi era begins. And that allows us to have very good reference points, where children look and feel reflected in these players.
La mentalidad surge de la competencia.
Mindset comes from competition. Here you live with a lot of passion and with a lot of desire. So when children of 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years of age play, the matches are competitive. Children don't just play to play and have fun. They play to win. So that allows them to be strong and be very intelligent, because they have to solve many problems. Because winning is not the same as losing. Here you have to try to win.
Aquí hay que tratar de ganar.
There are trophies stacked on a table in the room where we're chatting. In block capitals in the world, there's a motivational slogan. Its direct English translation is, success is planned, failure is not.
A veces nos pasamos un poco, ¿no?
Sometimes we go a little bit overboard, but that also allows the players to be like the ones we have internationally. We have players distributed all over the world who live far from home and have to be good at being able to earn money. Because the Argentine economic situation is not good, the players want to try to help their families, and they're always thinking about being good and playing well, winning a lot of games to be able to earn a lot of money to be able to bring it to their families.
Y nosotros tenemos que trabajar sobre eso porque somos un país exportador de jugadores.
We have to work on that because we're a country that exports players. The players have to train here in Argentina as children, but when they grow up, they want to play in Europe. So we have to mentally prepare them, because it is not easy to be in another country without family, without affection, without friends, with a different culture, with different food. It is important to go to a different place with an open mind. An open mind like yours. You come here and you're not Irish in Argentina. You're an Irishman who comes here and thinks like an Argentine, because if not, you couldn't be here. We have to go to Ireland and learn from the Irish culture. We cannot go only with our culture.
Aprender de la cultura irlandesa. No podemos ir solo con nuestra cultura.
We chat about his nephew, Alexis.
Está completamente adaptado a la cultura inglesa y a la forma de vida, y eso...
He is completely adapted to the English culture and the way of life. And that is very important for his level of performance. When he was 14 or 15 years old, we had already seen that he was very good. But here in Argentina, there are many very good players. My brother always advised him on the tactical side. We have a WhatsApp group here where Alexis plays and we all talk about how Alexis played. Then Kevin plays and we all talk about how Kevin played. Francis plays and we all talk, we watch on television, or we go to the stadium and we say Francis was very good, Francis wasn't good. Kevin was good, Alexis was good, Alexis wasn't good.
Francis, muy bien, Francis, no bien, Kevin bien, Alexis, no bien.
I'm sure you'll agree that this family is stupidly talented. And I ask Pato why he thinks they've had the success that they've had.
Porque nosotros tenemos mucha mentalidad muy fuerte.
Because we have a very strong mentality. When we were kids, with my brother and sister, we lost our father when I was 10 years old and my brother was 8. We were a very well-off family financially. But when my dad died, we got into a very bad shape financially. And that made us realize that life can be up and it can be down. But the important thing is to mentally be strong. And from that, we, the whole family, thought, well, we have to continue without dad. We have to continue without mom. With the brothers, and we have to be well, and that made us very strong mentally, and transfer all that to our children.
Sí, fue muy difícil la crecimiento nuestro.
Our growth was very difficult, but the most important thing was that our mother was always by our side. She protected us, she helped us. We know our father was a very good person, but our mother always helped us to be mentally prepared, to face life and be stronger every day, and to enjoy every day and transmit everything that we have experienced to our children and later to our grandchildren.
Disfrutar y estar con alegría y transmitir todo lo que nosotros hemos vivido a nuestros hijos y a nuestros más adelante a nuestros nietos.
This has been Pato McAllister. We've been sitting here in Club Deportes, the McAllister here just outside Santa Rosa. It has been an absolutely fantastic day. Pato, muchas gracias.
Bueno. Muchas gracias a vos y nos sentimos muy identificados por tu cabello, por tu color de cabello, que es muy similar al de toda la familia nuestra.
Pato says he can relate to the fact that I've got ginger hair. He says it's similar to his entire family. Here they call red hair Colorado, he says.
El Colorado le dicen. Sí. A los pelo rojo le dicen Colorado.
Gracias.
Gracias.
We walk out through the Mac store and Pato gives me a Club Deportivo McAllister jersey. It's white and blue. Later that evening, he buys me dinner in the town. The red carpet has rolled out to such an extent that I'm going to have to pull out all the stops when the McAllisters make their trip to the ancestral home in Ireland. I must say, though, it's nice to finally get a little bit of a break in this relationship I've developed with the 2022 World Cup. If you're a regular listener, you'll know by now that my only objective before this trip was to be in Argentina for the World Cup, in case they actually won the thing. I failed in this sole objective, and I will never, ever get over the heartbreak watching that World Cup final from the massive distance of northern Colombia. A little part of my soul dies every time I see a video of the celebrations in Buenos Aires or elsewhere in Argentina, knowing that I could and should have been in the middle of them. But then again, if that had been me, I wouldn't have been in that Patagonian shack at the same time as those Santa Rosa bikers. I certainly would never have come into contact with the McAllisters. It's like I've finally scored a goal, and now only trail by about 467 goals to one.
Hola, Dickie. ¿Cómo estás?
How are you?
Very well. Very good to meet you.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you very much. How are you keeping?
That get me the fault. Yeah.
Curve Mahagot.
70 minutes outside the city centre of Buenos Aires is a neighbourhood called Hurlingham. There's a golf course, a racetrack, a River Plate training ground, and there is a place called Hurling Club.
You have the couple of focal.
Studying, trying to study a little about. It's not very easy, you know?
Yes, it's...
That is a wonderful language. Where we are from, Kerry.
At its gates, Hurling Club's crest is painted on the wall. It's a shamrock on a blue background.
But you learn at school.
Exactly, you know, 14 years...
Primary and secondary, both.
Exactly. You learn it for a long time.
But you didn't speak.
That's the problem, no practice.
But you understand.
I understand it. Exactly.
But let me see, because at this time, you know, probably it's no problem, sir.
Yes.
Well, this is the hurling club for you.
Yes, wow.
This is the hurling ground in Buenos Aires.
Incredible. What a setup.
100 years.
100 years.
Yes, last year.
Last August.
Yes, last August.
The man I'm speaking to is Dickie McAllister.
This was presented by the GAA. Look at the GAA. What is this?
Wow, that's the Men's GAA World Cup.
Oh, no. This is 2014 or 2015, Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
We won the Gary Football Championship.
Right.
We beat in the final to Galicia.
Okay, right.
International. Brilliant. So this is the trophy for being the champion that year.
The clubhouse of the Hurling Club, as you can tell, is basically a museum.
Santiago Farrell.
1923, look at that.
Wow.
Capilla Boys.
And you have some gifts from the former president.
This is Egon Farrell. He was a president of Uctoron and the GAA. What's your schedule?
I don't really have...
Tell me your schedule. What's your time? How many time you have here?
I have all the time in the world.
Yes, Dickie McAllister is related to the McAllisters of Santa Rosa La Pampa. Alexis McAllister's grandfather is second cousins with Dickie McAllister's father. You're going to find me insufferable now, but I just couldn't not tell Dickie how I ended up coming into contact with the football McAllisters.
This is unbelievable.
How you get the contact?
Well, this is a crazy story. So, a few weeks ago, I was travelling through Patagonia. Hitchhiking, Hazard Day. I had this lift off a Chilean truck driver.
Hitchhiking?
Exactly. Only hitchhiking.
It's about 500 or 600 kilometers, something like that.
It was.
So this guy tried to make you to contact the family.
Exactly.
But you know, La Pampa is a province where the Irish community is not very big.
Alexis's dad, Carlos Javier, is the only one of the family's Santa Rosa clan who Dickie has actually met.
So in a certain way, they grew up with a certain distance with the Irish community. Different in Buenos Aires, you know?
But he's keen to develop a relationship there, which makes sense when you're a distant relative of a guy who's just won the World Cup.
That was a pity. because they became so important for the Irish community nowadays as soccer players, now with the World Cup.
And while the connection to the footballers is fascinating, I'm here to get the story of this hurling club. And so we sit down in the bar for a chat.
You know, we are Irish Argentine, very special people, the Irish Argentines. So far away from Ireland, but in a certain way, so close to Ireland in our hearts, you know?
Sure. The bar is beautiful. One of the walls is made up of stained glass windows which feature the family crest of surnames that are Irish and some that are very much not Irish.
Here we are in the dear hurling club. The hurling club started as a federation. We used to be at the beginning the Argentine Federation of Hurling, formally founded in 1922. And every weekend, the different teams come to Devoto on Saturdays and Sundays to play the different matches of the championships. The different teams, in a certain way, they were also families, you know, Fahi boys. The Fahi boys were the Scalies and the Wades. The people from Mercedes, San Patricio Mercedes, were the McCormacks and the Horans, you know? So after the matches, you know, for example, play Fahi boys with San Patricio Mercedes. And the match, you know, hurling on those times, we're talking about 1920s, 1930s, you know, the matches were hard. It seems that during the matches there were people, you know, with the head crush or the hands crush or whatever. They take this boy, they take to the hospital. And the doctors in the hospital say, oh, look, hell, these crazy Irish are playing these fucking games again because they receive all the hurt people in the hospital. After the match, you know, the ladies tease and dances. But look out, if you invite a girl of the other team to dance, that would be a quarrel for sure, you know. But talking about the history, really, really, so what happened during the Second War, 1940, 1939, 1940 mainly, hurlers didn't arrive to Buenos Aires. Hockey sticks arrived to Buenos Aires, but hurlers didn't arrive to Buenos Aires. So it was a pity, because here the Irish Argentines tried very hard to grow the ash tree, like in Ireland. But what happened with our temperature, with our weather, the ash tree here in Argentina grows so fast that the wood, it wasn't fit for what you need for the hurley, you know? So the lack of hurleys really decided that the game was over. At that time, some people say, the chieftains of the time says, well, perhaps it's better to stop the game because about these quarrels between the different clubs and the different families. And well, at the time they decided to quit the game, and start with other sports, mainly hockey field, so similar to hockey field, and rugby. I always say, I sad in a certain way to say that in my young years, I had not a chance to play hurling. Mm-hmm. I played hurling as a goalkeeper in the exhibitions, but with 40, 50 years old, you know, mm-hmm. It's different. But I didn't have the chance to play hurling as a, like my father, for example. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the chance, for example, every weekend have the chance to speak with Irish people. I call it a broken bridge, mm-hmm. between the Irish in Argentina and Ireland. For example, my story, my family, McAllisters. The McAllisters in Ireland found out us in 2000. Because the visit of a foreign minister of Ireland, Dick Spring, he came to the club, and then he went back to Ireland, and he wrote an article in the Irish Times saying, look, I've been in Buenos Aires with the Irish diaspora at the hurling club. I found McAllister, Lynch, Wake, Quinn, Scalies, you know. And a McAllister in Dublin read that article and sent a letter to the hurling club, McAllister, Hurling Club, Buenos Aires, Argentina, and the letter arrived to the club. And I received the letter. At the time, I was 30 years old, so no, for more, I was 40 years old at the time. I received the letter, and well, so I answered the letter. And after that, we found that we were family.
Wow.
This is the place where we received the fans of the club who came to play here, you know?
Okay.
Every weekend. We have a lunch here and we have fun here, you know?
You mentioned there's a couple of people here, you know, who are younger players with the hurling club, for example, and they're obviously Irish people who've left Ireland to come here recently, last 10, 15 years.
Yes.
What's your opinion on how that situation is right now? I'm only basically a tourist here. I don't understand what it's like to live here. But as you mentioned yourself, it's more difficult to live in Argentina now than maybe it was when you were growing up earlier, certainly economically speaking.
The last 20 years in Argentina are very, very bad, exactly. Since the last 20 years. But you know that the Irish people have this spirit of traveling abroad.
Yes.
Since 2000, I will say to you, every year I receive in the club two or three young people coming from Ireland to Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
When I was 20 years, receive an Irish in the club was so rare. Since the last 12 years, 10 years, the Gaelic Games are becoming more and more important in the club.
Than the rugby?
No, I don't say that.
Okay.
We are working hard, mm-hmm. that Gaelic Games would be in the same level as rugby, hockey, field hockey.
Sure.
And Gaelic Games.
Okay.
Probably Gaelic football. Why? Because Gaelic football, you know, for the rugby boys would be much easier. They have to know that we are an Irish club forever. Nowadays, I told you, perhaps 50% of the population may be Irish heritage. 10 years more, 20 years more, 30% would be Irish heritage. But it's important that they know that we are an Irish club. As I told you, for the first time in 100 years, we have a president with a non-Irish presence. For the first time in 100 years. But well, that's, you know, it will be like that. You have to accept that. We have to accept that, no? But it's important to keep traditions. Sport is a tradition. St. Patrick's Day is a tradition, you know? Well, this is the most famous hurling team.
Fahy's boys.
Fahy boys.
Who are they?
Fahy boys. You know, Father Fahy was very important in the 1840s here.
Okay.
He was a priest. He was, in a certain way, a chieftain of the community here, and very important. So, when he passed away, after a yellow fever in Buenos Aires, he was a close friend of William Brown.
Okay.
Father Fahy. And so there was a school called Fahy. And the priest, they were parsons or palatines, teach the boys the game. But during the times of the Federation, it was the most successful team. Another question. What happened with the Irish? What happened with the Irish in Argentina? Because for example, my family were from Dublin, probably from Dublin. They did, I don't know if in some way they speak Irish. Well, my great-grandfather, I suppose, he knows Irish. My great-grandfather. But he never speak here in Irish. So the Irish was completely lost. It's a great language. It's a great tongue. I love Irish. It's
you have a few words.
No, I'm studying.
You're studying, yeah?
In Duolingo, by internet.
Duolingo for
Irish. Tagwalgagan.
I'm learning,
that's right. I have to, you know, the years, as usual, every language, the problem is to listen, to understand.
It's difficult.
It's easy to talk, but it's hard to understand sometimes.
And
the pronunciation.
Yes.
The pronunciation is also, so it's mainly for us Spanish people, you know. Yes. Because the Spanish, it sounds like you write it.
Yes.
In English and Irish, it doesn't sound like you write it.
No.
Sirche. If you say, spell Sirche, S-A-O-I-R-S-E, it's crazy. Sirche, you know? Yeah, Siobhan. All the Irish names, it's funny, the Irish name, you know?
Yeah.
And the Southern Cross was an Irish paper.
Okay, and what happened to the Southern Cross?
The Southern Cross is since 1875.
Uh-huh.
It's the oldest one.
Is it still going?
It's still going.
Is it? Okay.
In the internet, you know?
Yeah.
No more paper. And I sing the anthem of the club, of my club.
Oh, yes.
That is a tango. Tango that says, the tango says, jugar en hurling club, fumar, chupar. Soy deportista, me gustan las coristas. Más cuando juego, vomito lo que bebo. Larga el pucho, porque dice Papucho que está fumando mucho y te van a colgar.
I just wanted to ask you one more thing on that, and this is when we're talking about Ireland. Like, I mean, people who are here as expats and people who will go home to Ireland, we miss our homeland. Do you have that sort of similar attachments to the country, even though you weren't born there? You've only gone back to visit. Do you yearn and look forward to your trips to Ireland? And I mean, you're not in Ireland. Do you feel that you're missing something by not being there?
Yes. Yes. Since 1993, I've been in Ireland 5 times. Mm-hmm. I've been many times in Ireland. And I want to be this year. I will go back. I will spend at least 10 days in Ireland with the family and friends, for sure. And probably will be the last time, you know, because I'm 73, you know. My brother is younger than me, he's 71. Now he has a cancer disease, you know. Recent now, so you never know. When you are here and you're all the time, because the club, because the stuff, you know what's going on there, more or less, and you are, in a certain way, you are in touch. Not like 20 or 30 years ago, you don't know anything about Ireland. But the point is, I would love to go to Ireland each 2-3 years. I need to go. But I don't know if I would live in Ireland.
Sure.
Because I'm also Argentine, you know.
Of course.
That's what I told you at the beginning. We are very special. Irish Argentines. Now it's very common in Argentina. The young professionals want to go abroad. They don't want to stay here because the country's 20 years is a mess. 20 years of a mess, you know. 20 years of a mess. It's crazy.
It's been remarkable spending some time in your company. The one thing I would say when you talk about those Irish people who want to come to Buenos Aires, we all want to come to Buenos Aires. It's one of the most magnificent places in the world, if not the greatest city in the world. And of course, the last 20 years have, I'm sure, been frustrating beyond belief, but it doesn't change the fact that the people are still the same people and the city is still, to a degree, the same city. It is a truly remarkable place, and I'm sure good times are on the horizon at some point soon. People always want to come here. As much as you want to come to Ireland, we always want to come here. So I'm sure that will never stop. That tap of Irish people who come here will never turn off.
That's very nice. Very nice that the Irish young people loves to come to Buenos Aires, not only New York or Boston or whatever.
Dickie McAllister, thank you so much for your time.
No, you're welcome. You are very welcome. Very welcome. And thank you to you, Owen. Thank you very much. Y ahora lo mejor. Y aunque no seas irlandés, al hurling club lo querés. Pepe, la última cubana, pronto que el referí nos llama. Corre que tengo que jugar y después me vas a preparar el cóctel que sabes con la magia sin par de un deportista 100%. Chan, chan.
Final episode of this series, episode 10, we will be back in Buenos Aires. But I'm on the verge of getting a restraining order from the McAllister family, so I decide not to track down any more of their clan, for now. When I leave Santa Rosa La Pampa, I make the short journey north to a town called Intendente Alvear. I arrive on Friday morning. I know that my next stop will be the city of Cordoba, and the only bus to Cordoba at the weekend is at 11:55 p.m. on Sunday night. So, if you're travelling north through Intendente Alvear and you arrive on Friday, then you've got no option but to soak up every last second of whatever the bustling weekend nightlife has to offer. And you have plenty of options.
You could sit in the empty patio with the fairy lights where Avenida San Martin meets Avenida Sarmiento. The aesthetic suggests a beer garden, but is actually a kiosk that sells ice cream. You could also sit on a bench in the gigantic town square across the road, sip on a can and wonder why on earth a town of fewer than 10,000 people has such a large square. Here is the entirety of Intendente Alvear's English language Wikipedia page. Intendente Alvear is a town in La Pampa province in Argentina. Ends. Welcome to the city that always sleeps. Thankfully, I don't have to decide between all of those Friday night options, because a man called Gaston de Chicasa has come to collect me in his 4x4.
¿Cómo es tu nombre?
Owen.
¿Cómo?
Owen.
Owen. Owen.
Sí, hey.
A mí me dicen Pollo.
Pollo. Pollo.
Sí, Pollo, como chicken.
Gaston's nickname is Pollo.
Chicken en inglés, ¿no?
Sí, chicken. Sí, exactamente. ¿Por qué Pollo?
And this weekend, Pocho is giving me a bit of insight into the national sport of Argentina, which isn't football. It's a sport called pato.
¿Anduviste en otro lado filmando pato ya o no?
No, it's me. Mañana es mi primera vez.
Pato is a bit of a religion here. We're in gaucho country, and gauchos such as Pocho may make the case that real sport shouldn't be played on foot. It should be played on horseback.
Todo tu vivo es con caballos.
No, caballos y vacas también.
A vacas también, sí.
We're on the way to go for asado. We've arrived at a large farmhouse. When we step inside, there are 7 men and 3 boys sitting at a big kitchen table. This is the home of Cacho Rosier, and Cacho is the oldest man in the room. He's got a sort of Yoda-like presence. He offers me food and a can of beer.
Oh, wow.
It's meat served with meat, some bread, if you're so inclined. It's lamb and it's beef, presumably sourced from somewhere not far from the back garden. It's cooked, chopped up, seasoned with salt, nothing fancy, and it's absolutely fantastic. They wonder if I've made this journey all on my own. And please forgive me, but this is where I jump to the point of being completely and utterly unbearable. I am telling the story of meeting the La Pampa bikers again. God, I need to get a new yarn.
Todo de Patagonia con Astro Dedo.
¿A dedo fuiste?
Sí, estuve loco. Estuve loco.
Estuve loco.
The pace of speech is bloody hard to keep up with.
Así que, loco, que ahí está el mejor lugar. Con Pollo va a conocer todo.
¿Con Pollo a Córdoba?
Sí.
No estoy seguro.
And somehow, once again, I've managed to turn this conversation into something about Ireland. This is absolutely inexcusable, but I've brought the 2002 World Cup into things.
Sin Roy Keane.
I've brought Roy Keane's departure up.
Roy Keane salir antes del Mundial.
Someone needs to stop me being so unbelievably annoying, because here I am, at the kitchen table of a stranger, yammering on about Saipan. I do make up for it by referring to Argentina as the greatest country I've seen on this trip.
Es el mejor. Tienes todo aquí.
Which is my honestly held belief, to be fair. We go our separate ways for the night.
¿Qué pasa, crack? ¿Todo bien?
Todo bien.
¿Cómo está el asado?
Bueno.
It's Saturday afternoon and Archie, one of the men from the asado last night, has come to pick me up.
Anda, sacásela a la lesana. Sacásela, que te la hace mierda. Sacásela.
We arrive at a small farm where the horses are being prepared for pato practice. Their manes are shaved. Shoes are set in place. And they're sent up the ramps into their trailers.
Caballos.
Sí.
We arrive at a massive field where everyone has come to congregate. The equipment is laid out and the horses are saddled, their legs taped up. The players ride out into the pitch. Pato is a sport that goes back to the 1600s, and it is a game that originally took place when groups of horsemen from neighbouring ranches would meet up and they would try and grab hold of a live duck in a basket. Hence the name Pato, which is the Spanish for duck. Whoever got the duck home first was declared the winner. Money and land was often wagered, but the games were so chaotic that people were regularly trampled to death or died in fights that sparked as a result of the games. Naturally, the game became a bit of a nuisance, especially in urban areas. As punishment for playing the game, players were threatened with a month's hard labour, or worse, excommunication from the church. But it had something of a renaissance in the 1930s, after the game was modernised and more civilised rules were put in place. Replacing a live duck with a ball was a good first step, and President Juan Perón is the man who made it the national sport in 1953. It is a four-side game, and the objective is to throw the ball into one of the hoops at the opposite ends of the big field while you're riding your horse. It's not like a horizontal netball or basketball hoop. It's a vertical hoop. And the best way to describe it is that the hoop is like that depicted in Quidditch, except it has a net on it. The ball has six handles on it, which makes it easier to pick off the ground. But still, the art of picking the ball up when it's dropped is pretty amazing, with the horseman hanging off the side of his horse and getting down low to the ground at high speed. The other signature moment of the sport is when someone gets hold of one of the ball's handles while someone else is in possession. It leads to this dramatic tug between opposing players as they try to grab the ball for their own team. Here's Pocho speaking to me when he's taking a break from the action.
Sí, juego de que era pequeño, sí. Desde muy chico.
I played Pato when I was little, from a very young age. I'm from here, from Intendente Alvear. And this is something for everyone, for small people, big people, old people, not old people.
Lo que pasa es que cuando te vas poniendo grande, vas perdiendo cosas y tenés que aprender a jugar distinto porque hay cosas que no las podés hacer.
What happens is that when you get older, you lose certain things and you have to learn to play differently because there are things you cannot do because you get tired. When you were 20 years younger, you went down to collect the ball, but now you let a younger person collect it. Pato is a sport when you need a lot of physicality. It involves a lot of risk, a lot of strength. You're in a state of friction all the time. So that's why you have to be in good physical shape. When a ball falls to the ground, the player behind has priority to pick it up. You cannot enter from one side or the other.
Este deporte requiere de caballos buenos, es más fácil todo. Sí, porque acá en este pueblito, en Intendente Alvear La Pampa.
This sport requires good horses. Here in this little town in Intendente Alvear La Pampa, at one moment in history, between 1997 and 1998, there were 7 polo players with a handicap of 10. This is the only place in the world where there was a small town of 5,000, 6,000 people, and there were 7 polo players at the same time with a 10 handicap, the most you can have.
Gaston is talking here about the Aiguilles, a famous family who formed the Indios Chapalefu team, one of the most successful and iconic polo teams of Argentina, who come from this area. He tells me that many of the horses that he has come from the breeding of Bautista Egui, and the genes go back 50 years.
I work with cows and horses. Always, if you can, you sell a horse for polo to cover the expenses of this. Your life is not just pato, pato, pato. It can't be. You have to work. And pato is a sport that you love, but everything comes out of your pocket. It pays nothing. And the difference between pato and polo is that you're always asking where you're going to play, where you're going to practice, or where you're going to play a tournament. You always have a friend you can stay with, where you're going to eat an asado. It is more about humble country people, and pato taught me to make many friends that are around the rest of the country.
El pato para mí me enseñó a cosechar muchos amigos que hay en el resto del país. Conozco mucha gente, y eso para mí es una de las cosas muy lindas que respeto del pato.
I know a lot of people, and that for me is one of the best things about the sport of pato, which is almost more important than winning a tournament. It is something that you cannot buy from a friend with money. It is competitive, but it's also social. Yes, you're gonna play. Maybe you have to play in a tournament, but you play the first game with your friend and then you're staying at his house at night. The game ends and we eat barbecue and have a beer.
Termina el partido y vamos a comer asado. Sí. Tomar una cerveza.
Es un deporte mejor en el mundo.
Perdón, Luis, agárrale más.
No, está bien.
Un gaucho es un hombre de campo que se viste prolijo, sombrero, pañuelo.
A gaucho is a countryman who dresses neatly with a hat and scarf, traditional clothes, boots, sashes, rastras.
Rastras, also known as a cinch, are sort of decorative belts that hold loose-fitting trousers in place.
Siempre un gaucho de campo andaba así en el campo y así también andaba en una fiesta criolla.
A country gaucho always walked around like this in the countryside, and he also walked around like this at a creole festival, a horse riding festival, a ring festival, whatever. It was like a going out trend that people had before. Now there are not many gauchos left because agriculture has caused people to become less involved in livestock farming, so there are almost no posteros in the field. Posteros are people who live in the fields, so this is what has happened. Many gaucho people have been lost. The gauchos were the ones that started playing pato.
The sun is high in the sky. You've got dogs and humans asleep in the shade. They're woken up by the odd shout of Golazo! The horses change hands a lot, so that no one has the benefit of the best horses for too long, and no one is stuck with the less gifted horses for too long either. The practice comes to a close. Everyone packs up and we go back to leave the horses out on a different farm.
Qué lindo con el sol.
Sí. Esta es mi casa.
Sun sets over La Pampa and the place looks ridiculously beautiful. We huddle together in a tiny kitchen. Fresh bread, ham, cheese, cans, cigarettes. This has been episode 8 of Diverted, a 10-part original series for Off the Ball, produced by me, Owen Shahan. A big thank you to Fabian Costello, a former Newell's Old Boys footballer now living in Ireland, who called in the help of his two sons to translate the voices on this episode's Spanish speakers. We will be bringing you plenty of more stories from sport and Argentina in episode 10 of Diverted. But if you like this episode, your 5-star ratings, likes and subscribes would be fantastic. My handle across social media platforms is Owen Shahan, as all one word. And there is video content across those platforms to accompany this podcast, and all of that information is also in the show notes. In the next episode of Diverted, the penultimate episode, we will go back to the very beginning, to the USA, for some college football, some hi-a-lie, and combat sports' newest trend, pillow fighting. Also, the penultimate episode of my Patagonia hitchhiking journey, where I tried to get out of my current mess and stumble towards the finish line. Chat to you then. Thanks for listening.